Yo.
Hey, there he is.
Thanks. Yeah,
This is
I'm
an
in.
insecure phone call.
It is. And how are you feeling about that?
I'm a pretty insecure person, so it suits me just fine.
Cool. Yeah, the S is optional.
The S stands for sometimes.
Oh, see, the redirection to HTTPS, I have to upgrade the plan.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, so it's never actually worked.
Well, freeware can eat it today. I must have bookmarked it as with an S, even though I always click it from a place with the HTTP.
Yeah.
What is that setup? You just have a redirect from your hosting provider to a Zoom link?
Yeah, actually, that's all it is. DN Simple offers that, like one of the first ones that I found that just did it. So I was like, hell yeah, I don't have to worry about like, I can just do a simple URL for it. Though I will say, if you go to, let me, we're doing this for DevOps Days Texas. Oh no, where'd it go? Firefox got angry. We create a bunch of short links using GitHub, believe it or not.
Yeah, except they're not short links because they're really, really long.
But
They're
they're
like longer.
consistent.
They're longer than the actual URL.
Are they irony links?
It's we have consistent branding with it. It's like links.devopsdaystexas.org slash CFP or slash COC or slash sponsor name.
I get it. But usually you would just not have the links dot and still have the like redirects on slash CFP or slash whatever.
Oh well, we didn't have a way to do that at the time, because we don't
It's
actually have a
Hugo.
website.
It's Hugo, right?
No, it's a little JavaScript app that does everything for us.
Oh,
Yeah.
sounds
So,
fair enough.
sounds like something.
Whatever works.
Well, what's going on, gents? What's happening?
This is episode two of our brand newly named at least podcast.
Yeah, I think
The hallway track.
we should rename it every few episodes too, just to keep things fresh.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so hallway track. I think eventually we have to land on a food themed name though. It was the ramen discussion on Twitter where somebody said they wanted to unsubscribe from that thread. It actually made me think that they were being ironic. So they might want to subscribe to a podcast about food in tech. But
Yeah, absolutely.
the old chef people, may they rest in peace, kind of stole that one with Food Fight show back in the day. That's a good show. But yeah, I don't know. We'll stick with this one. See
Well,
how
since
it
we're
goes.
ramening, we could be like, I don't know, hot nudes or something.
Yeah, that might attract a different audience. I thought this wasn't OnlyFans because you don't pay me enough for that.
Wait, you
But
get paid?
followers, exposure.
Oh, yeah, we haven't signed JJ up to receive our Patreon yet, so he doesn't know about it.
That's
Oh,
true.
right.
Yeah, all
Ooh,
that
we
money we're
should.
making on Patreon. Yeah. Whoops.
1 cent per listener. Thank you for your service.
Now, our listeners can't see, but JJ's beard perfectly matches the color of his shirt. So you can't see where his shirt ends and his beard starts, or vice versa.
And I wonder if it's true if he took his shirt off without dyeing his beard. Would you also
Wow.
have like the one pattern thing?
That's funny.
No one else thought that? Just me?
I mean,
That got weird.
he is kind of furry, so might
Yeah.
work out that way.
Yeah, no shame in that game.
Nope.
I've got some wing patches on my back, for better or worse. Genetics in your 30s, man. They get weird.
They do. They really do.
Speaking of less weird, we did mention ramen, which I think should be the theme of this week.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about ramen. So, Matt, you've been making ramen pretty consistently for a little while.
So I've been doing it for weeks, so I must be an
Right.
expert. Yeah.
So
No, it was
what
actually.
exactly makes up, like, to you, what's the definition of ramen?
Oh, man.
Like,
If you asked me a few months ago, it would be any, you know, hot bowl of delicious soup made in a some Japanese thematic way. But it's been fun to break that down into meaningful components. So there are two kind of, I'm super on the early side of this, but the two authorities I look to, the Way of Ramen YouTube channel is like the most practical, to the point, make some delicious ramen type thing. And the creator of that often teams up with the person known as Ramen Lord, who's actually wrote a book. It's like over 100 pages talking through ramen. And then I watched a series called
Breaking Bad,
The Art of Ramen.
Oh
yeah, that was good too. less nudes, more crack. And with ramen, anyway, so I watched some stuff. The components that keep coming up that I didn't know were separate until recently, where you've got your stock or broth, depending on how you want to put it. So you've got the soup component, and then the most important kind of complement to that would be the tare, like the sauce that has a ton of flavor, often is really like the big hit of umami flavor in it. Separate from that, which is, I never really understood as separate, is the oil. So there is some sort of oily component that adds an additional flavor profile, additional level of texture, and the fattiness. Like, you could talk through what that does to the meal, Paul. But just to complete the cycle, you also have the noodles, of course. There are lots of different kinds, really fun. And then last but absolutely not least is the toppings. And, you know, ramen's pretty famous for a couple toppings. There's the fancy looking egg, the ajitama, and then there's a fancy looking pork slice known as chashu, and a bunch of other stuff you can add on top. But like, those are the components that add up to a lovely bowl of ramen. And I've probably made a dozen so far, and my waistline definitely felt that for a bit. Delicious, but fatty AF. And yeah, but I'm having a ton of fun with it and trying new things.
Nice.
Yeah. So Paul, talk me through, you just made a beautiful looking bowl. What was it made of? What were the components? Yeah.
So I can talk through that. So I guess we'll start at, let's start at the pork and work our way down. So I wanted to have some like ready to go pork. Chashu is the word we would use in the ramen world, which basically, generally speaking, it's fairly thinly sliced rolled pork belly. And so I got a pork belly. I kind of seasoned it with some tare and vacuum sealed it. And I sous vide it for, I think, about 10 hours at 165. And then I took it out and I fired up some charcoal and got it as blazingly hot as I could, and just like seared the outside of it. So kind of looks a little bit like a porchetta, if you've had a porchetta before. It's just a matter of like slicing it. So I cut it in half, threw half in the freezer, and then I've sort of sliced through the rest, and I can sort of put that. I always have deli paper at home. And so when I do things like this, I can like put slices on deli paper and then more deli paper and slices on top, put them in a Ziploc bag and put them in the freezer. And that way it's really easy to separate like two or three or four of them at a time, because they've sort of got the deli paper protecting them from sticking together.
Nice. Yeah, you're full of tricks. I like
this. Yeah, and then when I go to eat it, I have the thin slices, and then I don't really heat it up per se, but I blast it with a like a butane torch to sort of char one side. And that's enough to sort of get it warm. And then when you put it in the ramen, obviously, it sort of helps get it warm as well. So that's that. Then there was the egg. So the egg, I kind of sort of got the recipe from you, but then I didn't even follow it. And that was...
that's basically our life together.
soft boiled eggs. So my usual go-to is bring water to a boil, a little bit of vinegar. I don't know if the vinegar really helps, but I just do it anyway. Put the eggs in when it's boiling. Take them out exactly 6 minutes, unless they're a bit small, in which case you can pull them out a bit early. Straight into an ice bath. And then when they cool down, peel them with under a little bit of running water. And that little bit of running water can be just enough to help you get under the shell as you're peeling it. So you do less damage to the shell, to the egg itself. And then you basically effectively you marinate the eggs in tarray or something that looks like tarray, which is, you know, a lot of tarays are basically soy sauce, mirin, sake, sugar, salt, and then sometimes some, like some aromatics. And you sort of boil them down, reduce it down so you have like a thin sauce consistency. And that's used for like ramen, but it's also like the main dipping sauce for yakitori, like when you get yakitori and they dip it in really? The sauce.
So you're saying I can add yakitori to my repertoire because I have a huge thing of tare right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then as well as that, if you have what's the eel on rice? The unagi.
Unagi.
You have unagi. That's also kind of finished with the same ish sauce.
Is it? It's a little sweeter.
So I mean, it's the same base. It's just different proportions.
Okay. Right? I'll allow it.
Yeah. So different proportions, but the same ingredients, and it's called a tare through all of those, because tare is effectively sauce. And that's where teriyaki comes from, is like it's kind of joining tare and yaki, yaki being grilled, right? So you think of takoyaki, yakitori, they're all like things that are grilled or barbecued. So effectively, teriyaki sauce is Japanese barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
But it's usually like a very, like, I would say dumbed down version of it, but it's kind of, you know, you buy from the store ready-made, so it's not quite the same as you would get at like a yakitori shop. So never, you would never like at a yakitori shop refer to it as teriyaki sauce. They'd probably get a little bit mad at you.
Yeah.
It's more than just that, but it's also kind of, you know, the same thing.
No, I like it. Like the chapter I'm reading right now is in the Book of Ramen by Ramen Lord, who's somebody who got pretty famous for ramen recipes on Reddit primarily. So yep. That's their username. And it's a really good book. Talks about basically it's like that tare is basically layers of secrecy in the same way that every barbecue shop has their own sort of secret sauce for their barbecue.
Yeah, and that's
it's providing,
right.
Yeah, what I appreciate that he broke it down like providing three main things, which is salinity, flavor, and umami. And Paul, why don't you break down like what, or I'll just ask the question, like what is the difference between the salinity and flavor?
So that's a good question. So obviously your salinity is like your saltiness, right? So that's from...
Yeah.
You know, from salt, from soy sauce, and often from dashi as well. It's not that uncommon to put some dashi in there.
Right.
But then you also have like umami kind of flavors from the soy sauce, from the dashi. You know, you have sweetness from sugar. So maybe the like sweetness and aromatics is where you're getting the flavor from.
Right.
I've always kind of thought of it as like, salty, sweet, umami as kind of the three things that go into a tare. But I could see where he might use flavor instead of sweetness, because there might be more going on than just like sweet.
Yeah. And anyway, so as we jabber on, Paul, JJ, are you a ramen fan? Let's back out of this a little bit.
So I've been watching what y'all have been doing with the ramen and all, and I just don't have the bandwidth, is a good word for it, to go down that path right now.
Yeah, but it's an investment.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're doing. And don't get me wrong, I like good ramen. But there's no way in hell I can invest that amount of, like, it's you've turned it into a sub hobby of cooking. I've seen this and I am jealous, but it's just like, I just don't have the bandwidth.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is like once you've got it figured out, so I guess I'll keep talking through what I had. So I also made a stock, and I actually used some store-bought chicken stock, low sodium, and I fortified that with some heavily reduced turkey stock that I had from Thanksgiving. And so that kind of became my soup base.
Nice.
And then I took... it wasn't homemade stock. It was actually the like the juice from the sous vide bag. So I chilled that, scraped the fat off the top, and then brought it to a boil, and then put it through a like a cheesecloth, just to get any of the proteins to coagulate and then come out, just so it wouldn't be like all murky.
That's cool. So you're going for like clarity in your broth?
I don't want it super clear, but I don't want it murky.
Right.
Right.
I was wondering because, yeah, I've been reading all, like you all have me on like this collection of books that I'm now misappropriating all into one big book in my head. And can't remember if it's Food Lab or The Art of Cooking or The Science of Cooking. There's something about like the like whipping or heating and mixing of fat modules will like in like increase the murkiness of a soup. So like straining it out is important.
There's two things that will kind of add the murkiness to the soup. One is like just like coagulated proteins. And that's, you get that in the form of the, like the scum that forms at the top of the broth when you're making like a stock or whatever. And you just deal with that by like scooping it out. It's totally fine not to, but it kind of ends up cooking back in and adding that like murkiness. And then the other thing is like your oils and fats. If you're doing like a high boil, they can actually almost emulsify in with the soup. And that's actually what tonkotsu is it's kind of the fat from the pork.
The emulsified.
It's been boiled so much until it's basically emulsified back through the soup.
Yeah.
But the thing you want to think about with soups and stocks is the more you concentrate or reduce them, the more actuated any non-clarity gets. So if it's a little bit murky at when it's freshly made, if you reduce it down to 50%, it's like at least twice as murky. So it can be pretty quick to become like cloudy and it still tastes fine, but it doesn't look the same, right? And so
that's such a good point. Yeah.
Ideally, if you pour it into like a white bowl, you want to see the bottom of the white bowl. As long as you have that, it's like that's as clarified as I want. Like, yeah. It doesn't have to be crystal clear. I don't need to like make an egg raft and like capture all the proteins and turn it into consommé. I find just like skimming it and being careful, you get a pretty good clear soup. Cool. The other thing I do is if I use any vegetables, I pull them out after about an hour, if not less, because by then they've already let out most of their flavors and they'll just kind of start breaking apart and you just end up with just particulate matter through it. And again, unless you strain that out really well, it's going to add to the murkiness. So that was my soup base. The pork fat I took from the sous vide bag drippings, I then added that with a bunch of garlic cloves and some green onions and then a little bit of extra peanut oil. And I basically just cooked that super low until all the garlic and green onions were sort of browned. And that then gave me my like flavored oil, right? So that was my, oh, and then the tare, I actually just used the tare that I did the ajitama eggs in.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that adds up, man.
Which, I mean, it's probably gives a little bit of egginess if you want to be super precise, but also like I don't want to waste a pretty delicious tare because, you know, it's got some egginess in it and I'm already putting eggs in anyway.
Exactly.
So then at assembly, you kind of put those three things together. So you add with like a couple of ladles of soup, you add the tare and you add the oil. And then you have the noodles, you have the ajitama egg, you have the char siu. Usually you have some chopped green onions, you might have some seaweed, you might have like the bamboo shoots. Something like that. Yeah. I always forget what the word is for that. And then like whatever you feel like. So I had some corn, so I added some corn. I actually had some pickled carrots and radishes from when I make banh mi. And so I sort of chopped them a little bit and put them in as well. And that was it. And so like once you have stock, once you have oil and once you have tare, like you can make a bowl of ramen anytime easily with like anything you have in the house.
Yeah.
And it is initial upfront investment, but as long as you make too much, you've then got like weeks or months of like ramens.
I was going to go back to that too. Yeah, JJ, it's definitely, it's an economy of scale type situation where like, as long as you're willing to, if you do end up finding that you have a Saturday that you just want to dick around at the kitchen all day, like I did, like I think messing with ramen totally saved my sanity this week. Oh, and maybe this will offer a pivot point, but the reason I was making a fancy ramen this weekend is because we were able to have a friend over for dinner for the first time, who's a doctor who has her COVID vaccine, like both batches with time for it to go through her system. So she was definitely non-viral. And she just asked me to cook her something that I've enjoyed learning. And I'm like, I'm going to put all this stuff together and see how it goes. Nice. And it was so fun. It was great to have a friend in the house. Super weird after so long, but
I can only imagine.
It's jarring, man. Like, how do you, anyone in either of your lives like on the short list for a vaccine? Like, I'd be curious to hear how you're processing that.
Yeah, so Kelly is on the short list, but the distribution here has been so bad that, like, she can't get anyone, she can't get booked in with anyone or anything. So it's been pretty rough. And lots of people, just through sheer luck, that aren't even in the early groups have been able to get an appointments and go in and get them. So it's pretty rough for people that really need it, watching that happen and just not getting lucky enough to get through. Because, like, everyone's phones are ringing off the hook. Everyone's online booking system is broken. So it literally is, like, luck of the draw, especially since when they open it, they have a set amount of time they have to use it. And like at that point, like you give it to whoever can take it, right? Because that's better than wasting it. So like, yeah. I get that, but at the same time, it's pretty rough for those people that need it.
Yeah, man. JJ, how about you?
Well, I'm a type 1 diabetic. So according to everything I've read, at least there's a system called an Austin Regional Clinic down here in Austin. And they say because of the stat, if you've been to Austin Regional Clinic within the last 3 years, they all have everything electronic. And if you are in what we call 1B, I think is the group, which is like me as a type 1 diabetic, you're already in line. And they will reach out to you when they have the vaccine to be able to give to you. So that's nice. I was just watching random tweets go by yesterday. And one of the Austin public radio reporters, his name is Matt Largy, actually consolidated all of the links that were for online signups for vaccines. And he released them all through like a tweet. And I was lucky enough to get my name on one of them through a Google form of all things, which I thought was really interesting.
Seems legit.
Yeah. Like, well, it's so as CZ mentioned about all these people like hitting all these sites and overrunning the phones and overrunning the systems and all, it seems so simple when I was like, well, yeah, that's exactly what Google does with Google forms. Of course, like, why wouldn't you use a Google form for this? Because it can actually handle that amount of load.
Exactly.
So I thought that was interesting.
Is Google Forms HIPAA compliant?
Well, no, they don't. They just put your name and email address and phone number on. Right. And this is not a guarantee or anything. This is just like, it's like a pizza sign up, like to get coupons or some shit.
He only uploaded the front and back of his ID to an unknown site.
Hey, from what I just needed that star on my ID so I could make sure that it was legit. And they wanted my passport too. I was like, okay, why not? Like, come on.
No big deal.
All right, well, when we're done here, shoot that link across to me.
We'll do.
Good. Well, I'm glad you are getting closer there. I definitely realize I am incredibly useless to society by COVID standards. So I'm at the tail end of the sign up process. And
well, so we're, according to CDC guidelines, we potentially fit in 1C because we're IT workers.
That's a stretch for both of us. You're a fancy marketer and I'm a less fancy marketer.
We keep
Kubernetes. I contribute to software that keeps data centers running.
So do I.
Right? Exactly.
That's fucked up. I'm gonna call it.
It is pretty messed up.
Yeah, my deeper moral fiber is saying that's some bullshit.
But 1C is kind of after most of the really critical needy people. So, you know, I don't want to jump in front of 1As, but I feel less bad about jumping in front of 2s when I'm probably a 2 anyway.
And really, like, I'm going to not pretend I know how to manage the logistics of over 700 million vaccine doses, since we need to do 2x of the population and then some. Because, like, you know, sometimes the most efficient way to package something up is to put something non-essential with a bunch of essential stuff, because reasons and flow and stuff I read in some book from Deming. Sure. So
theory of constraints.
Yeah. I don't know batch sizing. And if I fit into the batch because I'll show the hell up,
right,
so be it. But yeah, I would really like people that need it to get it first.
Absolutely.
None of the three of us have a ton of choice there, but we'll be our non-essential essential workers.
Now, of course, the core to doing some sort of mass distribution is to buy enough to start with. And I think that's where we really started behind the eight ball, because I think our initial order was 50 million doses, which is 25 million people. We were offered 700 million, but we said, no, 50 will be fine.
Yeah. Herd immunity, man. That's what we need, herd immunity.
We're only at 8% of people in the United States that either have it or, oh, I think it's up to 10% if you include vaccinated people. Right. So, yeah.
But also there's been plenty of people that have got it twice. So there goes the immunity perspective.
Right. Are they giving out like IDs or like paper saying that you got the vaccine?
You get a piece of paper and it's basically signed and dated for each dose.
Yeah, there's a chip embedded in it. Yeah,
I figured.
It's a 5G chip, right?
5G, right to your brain sack on a piece of paper.
Well, how else am I supposed to get Netflix in my head? I mean, I was expecting that, right?
Through advertisements, yeah.
And I don't know about y'all, but I'm definitely seeing a massive uptick of just random people in my network that are getting diagnosed with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, with COVID? Yeah. Yeah.
Like even people that I know. I thought you were talking about
brain chips still. I'm like, no, I haven't seen that yet. But I don't know if Bill Gates gets his way. Am I right? But yeah.
Even people I know that are like, have been pretty cautious up until now. I don't know if like their caution has slipped or someone in the network's caution has slipped. Because I think sometimes it's a lot of people have a trusted network, and it only takes one person in that trusted network to not do the right thing or to just slip up.
Right. And it's such a combination of like intentional exposure and risk, which I think we all hold like a little bit of like, we want to shame people for doing that so that we're all a little safer. And then there really is the uncontrollable network effect of insufficient testing in America. Where like you could go to the grocery store for 10 minutes every 2 to 3 weeks, you can still fucking get it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know. I've definitely struggled with I'm not quick to jump to conclusions about why somebody has COVID now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're late enough in the game where maybe you did let your guard down. Maybe you got unlucky. I mean, yeah, I look back to some pictures from earlier this summer with like friends on the back porch. I'm like, we were a little too close together. I'm lucky that we didn't get it. Like, that was foolish.
But you know, I was quietly judging you when you were talking about those events.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in my head, I'm just thinking, what is this fucking guy doing?
Well, same six people all summer, but right? Like six people times their network is
right?
Hundreds of people very quickly. Yeah, but like I also think that if we didn't spend some time with those people, we would have been so psychologically harmed that I don't think I would be well in a very real other way. And I've got no shame in saying that, like, that's important to me. Like,
yeah, I hear you.
And that was the line I was able to put down for ourselves, for myself and my partner did too. And if we got COVID as a result, I would say that was a fair trade. I don't want it. I sure don't want it, but I also, like, I know my limits, emotionally.
Yeah. And I think that's why I was only quietly judging you, but very loudly judging you, because I'm not in your shoes and I don't know, you know, the exact situation. And that's probably also might be one of the reasons I've sort of become less judgy about it, because I know you and I know you're not stupid. Therefore, if you're doing stuff that may seem risky to me, maybe it's me pushing the way I am onto other people, my expectations on other people.
Yeah. I mean, can definitely be both. It was both, like, you could call me stupid and I want to be able to hold that. You're like, by that definition, I definitely was. And also I think it was still the right decision at the time. Yeah.
I hear you.
Fucking terrible, terrible year. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, what year is it? So, okay. Going back to food, just to give us some sort of break from that. I did, Paul, you've told me to get snacks from the Asian market multiple times. And I just saw something. I was hungry. I was in line. I got this.
Oh, yeah. Those look good.
I only recognize the words Ren Jing. And on the back, it says it is a Weelong spicy gluten. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've had it open. It is aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, the scent is only describable as aggressive fish sauce. And they are soaked in red something. So I'm going to give one a try while you talk.
Wait, this is your first bite.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Oh, it's chewy.
Oh, it's chewy.
Yeah, I thought that was like a veggie stick or something like that. You know those veggie sticks you give kids? Yeah, I thought it was a veggie stick.
Hmm. Wow. Not,
I think I see some tears coming out of his eyes.
Not light on spice.
Yeah, one of the things I find with a lot of those.
Oh, it's really sweet though.
It's a really like powdery, like seasoning, and so it's so easy to get it like in the back of your throat or up your nose or whatever as you're like, not even eating it, but even as you're like opening up the bag and like whatever. So definitely, anytime I had that kind of snack, there's a lot of coughing involved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, my mouth, definitely maybe some Szechuan peppercorn in there because my tongue's a little tingly.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, it's hotter than the crispy chili sauce. Mm. Not as hot as like a top tier, like Hot Ones game show type vibe, thankfully. But like my tongue's definitely tingling. The chewiness is throwing me off though. I thought they'd be like chips. They're just, I guess, like just gluten chunks.
I guess so. Yeah, because I can actually, like, obviously we're losing a little bit because people can't see it listening, but
this is an audio medium.
As you're biting into it, we can actually see it stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the push, Paul. I'm both confused, but I'm and not disappointed. So, yeah.
My rule of thumb is, every time I go to an Asian grocery store, I have to come out with at least one snack I've never had before. Bonus points if I cannot read a single word on it.
Yeah. Oh, you did just remind me. I've been trying the same game, but with new vegetables every time I go there. I'm going to pick up a vegetable. I don't know what the hell it is. I'm going to Google until I find a way to cook it. And I went twice. I grabbed two on the last one. I got it looked like a daikon radish, but it wasn't. And I looked it up. It's a Korean daikon radish. So it's more bulbous, a little shorter. Great flavor on it. I sliced them reasonably thin and I put it into the base of a kimchi soup I was going to make.
Oh, yum.
So I just like waited until they were translucent and then I made the rest of the soup on top of it. And they're the most flavorful part of the soup. They're absolutely delicious, incredibly flavorful. It still had like a nice crunch to it, even after cooking for It's like 40 minutes. And then I also bought what I guess is called red mustard greens from that were also Korean.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had like a great greenish red color to them, really crispy. But man, they weren't nearly as bitter as mustard greens. And they're absolutely, it's like a better form of spinach is how I'm eating it. I'm just like braising it in some sort of sauce, or like pouring some of the broth that I made as a base for ramen. I just pour some in a pan, give it 2 minutes, and then pop it on the side like a nice spinach, like stewed spinach.
Nice.
Yeah, super, super different. Never would have cooked it, but yeah, just kind of trying some new stuff.
Very cool. So when you're making broths for ramen, so mm-hmm. one of my favorite tricks is to like make it and then reduce it right down to like a quarter, and then put it into quarter cup ice cube trays and freeze it. And that way, when you want to use it, you put it in a pot, add 3/4 of a cup of water to bring it back to the original consistency, and just let it sort of come up to the simmer, and you're ready to go.
That's awesome.
And that way you've always got ready to go like ramen base or just soup stock in the freezer at all times.
That's a fun idea. Cool. I've got way too much broth right now.
Right.
But I'm probably going to make a couple more pots as I try some stuff. I want to make duck ramen again.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then I'll go from there.
Cool. And the other thing is, if you think it might've been like in the fridge long enough to, you're like, oh, should I eat it? Should I not? Generally speaking, if you like boil it again, it's going to be fine. Because the fridge is going to more or less keep it a low enough temperature that no nasties are going to grow. And then boiling it is going to make sure there's no nasties alive. And so you can kind of keep a stock going that's in the fridge for like weeks if you do that.
Nice. Okay, cool. Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah. And that's why like a lot of, going back to tarays, a lot of shops have like, our taray is like 50 years old or 100 years old, because all they do is they top it up as they go through it. But it's always that same base, that same, you know, set of ingredients in the right ratios.
The sourdough starter of ramen.
And as long as you either keep it boiling or keep it above or below the like the safe zone, like in the safe zone, I should say, you can get pretty much indefinite life on it. And most of those shops effectively keep it at close to boiling like forever, right? Because it's in such huge quantities and they go through so much of it.
Nice. Well, what about you, JJ? What's keeping you entertained these days, if not the cooking?
Honestly, I've been just kind of keeping my head down and working on random things that come by. I don't really have a general project right now. I got so many things done over the winter break that knocked a lot of my projects out. So I haven't really found anything like that I can say is more than just like an afternoon. Though I will say, when it comes to food, being that I work from home, I can't believe I never thought of this. So I had made some steaks a while ago, and I got like the Costco thing of steaks, right? Where there's like 4 or 5 steaks in there. You never eat them all in one sitting unless you're really hungry. Yeah, exactly. But one of them I put in a freezer bag and I just threw it into the freezer, and it's just been sitting on top for a while now. And I woke up this morning and I was like, you know what? I'm going to set up my sous vide, kick it off about 2 hours before lunchtime, have it cook. And then when it's ready, I just turn on my grill and I sear it and I eat a steak for lunch. I don't know why I've never done this before. I don't know why, but it was glorious. First of all, I didn't have like a massive amount of carbs for lunch, right? That's something I've genuinely got to do, is cut down the amount of carbohydrates in my body. So I just had this really big steak, and yes, it took a little bit of while for the hunger to go away because it was like all pure protein, but like, that's really good. Like, why, I'm working from home, I might as well do this. So you might be hearing me talk about a lot more steak coming down the line.
Yeah,
That is a very good personal brand for you. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of that kind of activity, you know, because while you're kind of busy working, but you're also spending a lot of time on calls and like bouncing between stuff. And so there's usually a few minutes here or there to like run to the kitchen and like do something real quick and then come back. So I've got a couple of sort of go-to dishes that I can kind of loosely prepare through the morning. So by about lunchtime, it's ready to go. And actually like ramen is one of them. Because like once you have all the bits, it's like there's nothing to do to actually like put it together, right?
Yeah, my favorite noodles take 3 minutes. And if the other stuff is put together, you know, maybe you got to warm that up a tiny bit so it's not ice cold, but like done. It will take less than 8 minutes, like less than making a fresh pizza for sure.
Right. Yeah. And like the other thing I'll do, JJ, is I'll smoke like a pork loin and slice it into chops or steaks or whatever you want to call it. And like freeze those individually. And that way, you know, with
you know what,
5 minutes of effort, I have a really delicious like barbecued pork chop for lunch.
We've talked a lot about freezing meats in this conversation. So I think it's a good time to jump in with what do you use for a vacuum sealer? Because I'm assuming you both are like vacuum sealing or are you just like using straight up like a Ziploc and pulling out the air?
I do both.
Yeah, the real truth is that I do both. Keeping up with the bags, though, for like the Clicky Downs vacuum sealer one, that for me, it's always been hit and miss because there's a process that you've got to make sure that everything's lined up just right. And if you weren't paying attention and the other seal isn't all the way or there's like just a little bit off, like it can completely fuck everything over. But if you have like a Ziploc bag and you just like push all the air out and pull a little straw and suck out the last bit of the air, like that gets you there when you need it. And it's all done. So I know I've gotten some food from CZ from the Ziploc stuff before. And he's always been really good about putting more bag than you actually need for the food. That's another thing you've got to learn to do. You've got to be willing to go above and beyond what you need for putting the food item inside that really long bag. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'll second most of what you said, although I don't have as much trouble like vacuum sealing as you seem to be making out that you might be having. I just have one of those like upright food saver, like no frillsy ones. And that does just fine for most things. But I kind of have a thing where like using like vacuum sealed bag for like single servings seems like a lot of plastic, but then doing it for like multiple servings then means am I opening it, taking some out and resealing it? So I actually tend to err on the side of Ziploc bags. And I will make sure you get the freezer Ziploc bag, not the storage Ziploc bags, because you want to make sure that it is like a freezer impervious bag. Otherwise, it's much easier for like to develop freezer burn and whatnot in the bag. And what JJ said about sucking the air out with a straw, you can do that. But another way to do it is you just put it underwater.
Oh, that's basically the trick I learned.
Yeah, you put it underwater and like everything is underwater, push it, like the water creates enough pressure to push the air out. So you put it under the water until just the zip itself is above the water and then you just kind of zip it closed. And that's gets you pretty close to a vacuum seal. Certainly enough, close enough that you can sous vide with it like that. And it's perfect for in the freezer. And then, as I said, I often use the deli papers and I'll wrap things in the deli papers individually into like a bigger Ziploc bag. So I might have like six pork chops in one Ziploc bag and I can open it, pull one out, close it again. And it's pretty easy to go.
You can't do that with a vacuum seal. Am I right, JJ?
That's true.
You can get some like silicon, resealable silicon bags, but I haven't had a lot of luck with them. And so I tend to shy away from them. And I guess I probably am being pretty wasteful using Ziploc bags, but at the same time, I cook most of my food at home. And in general, there's way less waste in home cooking than there is in like
take
out restaurant cooking and takeout and stuff. So I don't feel as bad as using maybe more Ziploc bags than I probably should.
Fair. Okay. I had to ask, it's been something on my mind whether I pick one up or just kind of stick with the vacuum or like the Ziplocs. But yeah, I'll just make sure to get some freezer bags around.
I would definitely say if you start making a lot of bacon or you want to make big batches of chashu or something like that, it's probably worth having like a vacuum sealer. But if it's just for like bits and pieces here and there, you're fine with Ziplocs.
Word. Well said. Well, one other thing on my mind before we go. JJ, you have been a hell of a chess partner. Do you want to tell the listeners what we've been up to?
So we've been, Broberg and I have been playing. We move every 3 days, but it's actually a little bit more than that because it's pretty intense and we get into our games. But we're playing remote chess, which is great. Broberg is significantly better than me, which is always nice. Because I learned a little bit better. So I like the challenge. I have no problem with losing because every time I lose, I learn something new. And I am unbelievably happy that it's stuck between us.
Me too. It's been super fun, man. You were kicking my ass pretty bad last game. And just like, it's one of those ones where you're like, if you dick around with it at the wrong time, you make a goofy move and like the other person can capitalize. Yep. Like, yeah, your queen is off by one square. And I was like, oh, there's the little entry point for a checkmate. Yeah,
right there. Yeah.
It's been really fun. I don't think I'm going to be good at chess, but I really tried to stop caring whether I'm good at my hobbies and just keep doing the hobbies that are fun. And I don't totally know why, but chess has been a blast. I like do the puzzles every morning for like half an hour sometimes, like just go through the different puzzles that chess.com offers up. And I'm like reading a book on it again for the first time in a long time.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. And just to take it one step farther, if you know about Lin Chess, so there's chess.com, which is like the big, like, professional, or not professional, but like it's very much a company who runs it, and it's free. You can run it for free, but they have subscriptions. They have like an open source like chess system called Linchess or
Lee Chess, lichess.org. We should totally use that sometime. Yeah,
yes. Actually, it's GNU Chess.
God damn it. Well, I was going to say, it turns out that they have like a SETI like program where if you have extra computer cycles, you can run their little Rust app on there. And so when they're trying to do a computer analytics of different chess games, it'll use your extra CPU cycles for it, which I thought was kind of cool. So I have some extra CPU cycles sitting on my work computers. So I totally put that on there. And like, it just, I guess, they're used to like desktops or something, because I like slurped down all of their stuff, and now like it happens, like it's amazing how quickly that's.
You're not going to get rich on Dogecoins by spending all your CPU on chess moves.
I guess.
Oh damn! I haven't hung out on Lee Chess as much as I meant to, and I logged in, and their study section is amazing. Like it'll walk you through. Queen's Gambit, like step by step with a little squid to instruct you.
Oh yeah.
It's fun stuff. Oh yeah. I'm into this. Paul, have you ever liked a board game, chess?
Have I ever liked a board game?
Yeah. Do you have a soul? That's what I'm really
asking. Yeah, I do have a soul. I used to play a bit of chess, but I never spent the time to really grok like the strategy of it. So like I know the moves and I can like work my way through a game, but I've never spent the time to really understand like how to be good at it versus just, you know, how to play it.
Yeah, I feel that.
And also there's the one just to maybe hopefully like make people realize if they've gotten this far in the podcast. Also if you are just walking into the world of chess, there's a lot of different styles of chess too out there. Like there's the bullet chess, there's the quick chess, there's the time chess, there's all these different like different ways of doing it. There's the hell, you could never play a single person, you just play puzzles all the time, right? So there's so many different ways to consume the game of chess now that my only advice to you is experiment and figure out what makes you feel the most comfortable, that you feel that are, is the most entertaining. For me, it is really the 3-day chess moves, mainly because I learned to do that when I was traveling. So when I would be like stuck in an airport and I couldn't do anything because I was stuck in a line waiting to get on a plane or whatever, that's when I could make my chess move. I'd be looking at my the chessboard and not paying attention to anyone around me because fuck other travelers. But then I could make the move and do the thing. And then I would I could wait 3 days, which usually was the next time I'd be on a plane back home. So I could be able to make the next move, or my opponent would make the move in that time period, so I could do it. If that makes sense, like I strongly suggest experimentation.
No, I want to echo that. Like, I think it's fun to realize that you have different options. And I do like that. Yeah. We have these sprints where we like play half a game in a sitting and then we'll like take a couple days because, you know, you got to go cook dinner or like you probably have kids to, you know, hang out with and I walk my dog, whatever. Like, I like that. It's very much can fit into life without obsessively staring at your phone, which we do plenty of.
Really now, are there modern versions of, what was that, Battle Chess? Remember Battle
Chess? Oh, God, yeah. Battle Chess. Oh, what a name. I don't know, but I definitely want to know now.
So those of you who aren't from our era, Battle Chess was basically chess, but like they had like all the pieces were like, you know, animals or monsters or whatever, and they would literally have a fight. You know, it was pretty shitty graphics back then, but I guess it added a little bit of extra entertainment to just out and out chess.
Absolutely. It's good stuff. It's real good stuff.
It's good. It is very entertaining. But sometimes I think there's an element of like going back to nostalgia right now can be really satisfying. I don't know your story, JJ, but mine of like one of my favorite people in the world taught me how to play chess decently when I was a kid. And every time I'm messing around with it, I think of like this amazing mentor at an early age.
Nice. And
yeah. And I have been trying to do things that are very like easy lifts, but like elevate my mood a lot higher than the lift is. And just dicking around with chess, reminding me of people I really love is just a good investment.
Absolutely.
And I hope everybody listening is doing something to, you know, intentionally lift themselves up because no one else is right now.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely not this country.
All right, gentlemen. I think it's time to say goodbye. And then
sounds like a plan.
We'll be back next week. Say bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Oh, wait, why did we guys?
Yeah, why did we do that? Oh, because he was calling us guys, and we just repeated what he said.
But then we said, oh.
It's fine. I'll leave
See you later, y'all.
There you go.
Folks.